American politics may never be the same. On To The Point, we help you understand the trends driving this wild and woolly election.
Donald Trump has had nothing but wonderful things to say about all variety of dictators and thugs around the world.
Our system of politics right now is so incredibly corrupt.
The sense of nostalgia for a kind of lost cultural world and real anxiety about its passing, I think, is fueling, you know, much of what we're seeing.
I'm Armin Alney. Stay with To The Point through November and beyond on KCRW and KCRW.com.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a
Donald Trump was caught on tape saying he uses his celebrity to take advantage of women, including that he grabs them by, well, you've heard what he grabs them by. In the second debate, he dismissed his comments as just locker room talk and sort of apologized, but then five new women and counting have come forward to say he assaulted them. And as his polls have sunk further, many more Republican officials disavowed him, though some came back to the fold as the base got angry at their disloyalty. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, senior editor at Business Insider. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Meara, a Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. Our special guest is Kelly Goff, host of the WNYC show Political Party with Kelly Goff. Welcome, everybody. So as we wrapped taping last week, just hours before the tape came out, Rich asked me why I was so sure Trump was going to deteriorate further and lose by a wide margin. And while I didn't specifically foresee the Access Hollywood tape, it looks like I am being proven right on the deterioration. Let's start with you, Kelly. What's your takeaway from this long, weird week we've had?
Well, I guess my takeaway is that Donald, just when you think the bar can't be moved any lower, it is, in terms of the tone of this presidential campaign, in terms of Donald Trump's behavior in this presidential campaign, in terms of the behavior of his supporters during this presidential campaign. And so that's my real takeaway. But my other takeaway is that there is no party that has a monopoly on treating women poorly. I do believe that part of why we have not seen the Clinton campaign fully, at least the candidate fully engaging Donald Trump on some of these horrific allegations against him, is because, you know, neither party is clean on this one. I think that Bill Clinton has his own sleazy history. I think Donald Trump is sleazy. I think the difference is, you know, Bill Clinton's on a ballot this year, but I think this reinforces that neither party has a monopoly on treating women with dignity and respect, or not treating women with dignity and respect.
Margie, to that point, one thing I found interesting when Hillary Clinton talks about this is that she condemns the things that Donald Trump said on the tape and the things that he's accused of doing. But then she always seems to shift to saying, and it's not just women. We've seen his remarks about Mexicans and the disabled and prisoners of war. It's seeming to want to use this issue, but having the candidate shift away to other ground on which she can sort of more effectively argue against Donald Trump without people asking questions about her own family.
I don't think we need to read anything else into it. I think it's an important reminder how odious he is. And maybe it's because he had a brand of being a New York playboy that perhaps people find baked into the cake, however disgusting the cake may be. But these other things are sort of newer developments. There was a time way back when where people wondered if he was simply in character somehow as a way to try and win the Republican primary, and he would shift away from his more racially tinged remarks. And the answer was no. And no, he wasn't going to do either of those things. He wasn't in character, but it wasn't necessarily part of his brand. So I think it's an important reminder that this is not just about his sort of playboy, Miss Universe thing. It's about everything that he stands for from top to bottom, left to right, and all around. And I think when she reminds people of that, it's an important reminder because that's simply how big the stakes are here.
Rich, you wrote this week about supposed religious right figures sticking by Donald Trump through this process and offering these arguments that amount to moral relativism, saying, you know, well, who among us hasn't? And first of all, a lot of people have said, well, me, I haven't done this. But What do you make watching these social conservatives who were focused so much on the character issue 20 years ago now making these arguments?
Well, I think this is one of these times in American politics, and this happens a lot, when the arguments don't change, but everyone switches sides. So these figures on the religious right who are most excoriating about Bill Clinton's character flaws have now adopted a lot of the same arguments. It was old. It's time to move on. There are lots of presidents who are womanizers and all the rest of it. So they've revealed themselves to be completely hypocrites. But let's not pretend there's not a lot of hypocrisy on the other side, because Bill Clinton, whatever you think of Paula Jones and her sexual harassment case, it's extremely plausible that he did what she says in that hotel room. Juanita Broderick would never stand up in a court of law, you know, from this distance, but reasonable people who actually take that case seriously and look into it, it's extremely plausible that Bill Clinton really did assault her. And there's no one in polite company who bats an eye about that. So I don't think there's any upside for the Trump campaign to relitigate the Clinton stuff in terms of politics, but it's certainly very telling that there is a different standard for him.
Well, and also I just want to add too that the polling, they just had a Politico had a big piece about how focus groups have consistently shown that that's a non-starter to really go there in terms of President Clinton's peccadilloes and use that as leverage against Hillary Clinton. It's been a non-starter since she entered political life as a Senate candidate in New York. But I think, you know, to Rich's larger point about there being a double standard, I think we have to talk about how feminists treated Monica Lewinsky and the other women who were accusers of Bill Clinton. He's not wrong here, that there is a double standard where people tend to look the other way if it's in the best interest for them politically and policy-wise. And that's, I think, what this campaign is really showing.
Well, I think that's true, but I think people sometimes over-focus on hypocrisy as an issue to talk about. Yes, it was hypocritical to apply this standard now and apply a different standard back then, but the way that people treated Bill Clinton's accusers was wrong in a lot of cases. And the fact that it was wrong then doesn't mean that it's okay for the other side to do that now. The important thing is to be right. It's more important to be right than to be consistent. The part of the reaction that has bothered me the most this week to the accusations coming forward from the women are people basically saying things like that validate what Donald Trump said on that bus about if you're a star, they let you do it. I was on Point on NPR on Friday morning, and a woman called in and basically said, well, you know, these women should stop complaining, and this is just a thing men do. You had Donald Trump Jr. saying, well, this reflects that my father has an alpha male personality. And so what I think is different from this than the defenses that were offered of Bill Clinton, like a lot of people back then said they didn't believe Bill Clinton's accusers. I don't remember hearing a lot of, well, it's okay to behave like this, because this is boys will be boys. I find that alarming.
I think there's probably some of that. I don't know. I have to go excavate. Yeah, but this is no defense. And obviously, it's not locker room talk. We've all been around locker rooms. And yes, you hear vulgar terms. I've never heard anyone ever sober, drunk, in any condition whatsoever, bragging about grabbing women's private parts upon first meeting them. I mean, there's something wrong with that. And I take all of Donald Trump's boasts with a grain of salt, but this was always extremely plausible. And as someone pointed out, these cases, they're not really he said, she said, because he said he does this as a general matter, and they are saying he did it in specific instances with them.
Until it hurt his poll numbers, in which case then he says on the debate stage, well, I was just talking, I didn't actually mean it. But I do think there's a distinction here. One of the reasons I loved Michelle Obama's remarks is when she said how it denigrates decent men. How it denigrates decent men. And I actually think that might be the disconnect that we're talking about here between the two of you, which is you're decent men. And so I don't have a hard time believing that someone who grew up with the privilege that Donald Trump and the entitlement that he did believes that anything he wants is of the taking. It's just you just put a price on it. And I think that's indicative of how he treats a lot of people, not just women, but I think a lot of people. My real question, actually, Rich, is I'm wondering if this election is actually going to show the rise of the Mormon community being more of a force within a conservative
politics. Yeah, the Mormons are the new religious right.
Because they have actually, from Elizabeth Smart to Evan McMullen, to see me love and all of these Mormons actually hold the feet to the fire that I expected evangelicals to do this election cycle has actually been very telling. And Evan McMullen's poll numbers are something to really watch in terms of how they could actually flip the state of Utah, which is not being covered that much. But he's actually polling within the margin of actually winning among the four-way race.
You know, if he wins Utah, I still think it's a long shot. But if he does, he's kind of a historic figure. There are very few people in American history who have won electoral votes. And forevermore in children's history textbooks, this election, the there'll be, you know, the breakdown of the map, and there'll be a tiny little box with Evan McMullen's color. I don't even know what his color is. Is it yellow?
And, so and much, you know, six electoral votes. Think of all the things of this election that are going to be in history books, even if Evan McMullen wins some electoral votes. I mean, I hope that still warrants a mention in a history book, but it's got to have a lot of competition to be, you know, sort of the headline. I mean, what I find really sad and grotesque is this, you know, the sense we've felt that Republicans were the party of moral values. We even called them values voters, the shorthand, as if Democrats didn't have values. You know, we were the non-values voters. Questions in exit polls that said was one of your issues, values, that meant that people imputed in that all kinds of things and assumed that all of those folks were, you know, folks on the religious right who had very strong social conservative views. And I think people, you know, rounding up all those folks to be Republicans and of folks who had sort of this higher moral caliber, lording it over the rest of us. And, you know, to have that all upended so dramatically by someone who's almost cartoonishly the opposite of that, I find it so upsetting and sad. And also when you listen to some of the defenders of him, it's really, you know, we're horrified at how many people there are who are so excited to be able to trash these women who've come forward or to defend him, even when, you know, he can barely defend himself. He has no defense. I mean, the whole thing is so horrific. It's just making everyone, you know, so upset, myself included.
Rich, I'm wondering what you made of Mike Pence this week, sort of taking it upon himself to offer Christian grace and forgiveness to Donald Trump, who says that he has never sought forgiveness from God himself. We were talking last week about Pence having had a debate performance that was effective in various ways and the idea that this would acquit him well for Republican voters in the future. Is this a moment that people are going to look back at and see Mike Pence as having behaved well, or is it going to look gross?
I think every instance of him saying this is a good man and defending him on November 9th automatically becomes a liability. And he'll be, you know, wanted on various speaking circuits for a while, but I think just slowly it will kind of corrode and eat away at his political standing. And look, Christianity is about forgiveness and mercy, but Mike Pence, I would have to believe he went to Donald Trump, rebuked him privately over this, and that Trump repented, you know, and got on his knees and asked for forgiveness. There's no indication anything like that happened. And you know, these religious right leaders, they will say, well, we've talked to him, we've prayed for him, we've met with him, we think he's making progress. But, you know, Christians are not supposed to be boastful, they're not supposed to be greedy, they're not supposed to insult people, and on and on and on. So there's just zero indication any of this has had an impact on Donald Trump, which is a sign that he is using them politically, and at least some of them are happy to be used.
Not only is there no sign that Donald Trump prostrated himself before Mike Pence, Donald Trump even claimed that Mike Pence sought his permission to release a statement critical of Donald Trump over the tape. We're going to take a quick break. Let us know what you think about this wild week at kcrw.com/LRC. We'll be back with more on this. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Santa Monica-based public radio station KCRW relies on the support of its listeners. And one way to help is by donating your old car, truck, boat, or motorcycle. We'll pick up the vehicle from anywhere in the country. You can put your old ride to good use and take advantage of a great tax write-off, too. Visit kcrw.com/cars.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of Business Insider and MSNBC. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Margie O'Meara, a Democratic pollster and executive vice president at PSB Research. Also with us is Kelly Goff, host of WNYC's Political Party with Kelly Goff. So on Thursday, both Barack and Michelle Obama gave major speeches laying into Donald Trump on his treatment of women. Kelly mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show. I want to play a little bit from Michelle's speech where she talked about how Donald Trump's language about women is affecting the culture.
If all of this is painful to us as grown women, what do you think this is doing to our children? What messages are our little girls hearing about who they should look like, how they should act? What lessons are they learning about their value as professionals, as human beings, about their dreams and aspirations? And how is this affecting men and boys in this country? Because I can tell you that the men in my life do not talk about women like this, and I know that my family is not unusual.
I feel like there hasn't been enough focus on how traumatic an experience this election has been for the country. Even when Donald Trump loses, and I do believe that he will lose, I think this has been a stressful, terrifying experience for so many people, and also an embarrassing and disgusting one. And it's going to leave a mark on people, including children, but not just children. And when I heard that speech in that moment, it really affected me. I'm just wondering, what do we do about that on November 9th? What do we do to try to pick up the pieces in the culture after all this damage that Donald Trump has done?
I think Donald Trump is more a symptom than a cause, just a general breakdown of standards. And again, going back to the Christian right, these are the people who are supposed to be resisting this kind of crude tide in the culture, and they've given in as well. And a lot of my friends who are on the other side of the Trump divide within conservatism make that argument. Look, there are no standards or norms left, so why should we be the ones to try to defend them? Let's just go out and beat Hillary Clinton and not care about the man who's the character or anything else about the man who could do it.
Margie?
Yeah, I mean, the polls show that a majority of Americans feel stressed about this election. Other polls have shown that more people feel stressed about Donald Trump than have felt stressed about Hillary Clinton. Therapists are worrying about it. I mean, it is a real, real concern. I completely agree with you, Josh. And I don't know what we do next. I don't think there's a good plan for what we do next. I think the fact that we've seen how many people are excited about, you know, cheering for racist remarks, cheering for sexist remarks, I think that's horrifying. I mean, you can look at the silver lining and saying, okay, we recognize that there's more work to do, but on the other hand, I think I don't know how we come back from it. I feel very pessimistic that we can come back from the situation we have right now.
So I think we were all speechless because all of us have privately discussed that. Josh, you know, we've all been having those conversations at dinner. Last night at dinner, I was with two friends who work in media, and all of us talked about people we know who are leaving the industry, people who are thinking about leaving the industry because of how toxic, depressing, and awful this campaign has been. And any journalist of color I know, including myself, has been inundated with much more racist, hateful messages, email, and not just from one side. I mean, I've talked about how the Bernie bros were really nasty on this election cycle, and the Trump people are just, I don't even read what they say because it's so misogynistic and terrible. So it's been really awful. So there is no easy answer, particularly since we're not dealing with Mitt Romney on the other side, in terms of when this election's over, who we're presuming is going to lose. We're not looking at a Mitt Romney who would go to the White House and have, you know, chili and shake hands and say, let's all move forward together. That's not who we're dealing with. So there is no easy answer. The only thing I will say, though, that these two friends of mine who work in media said last night over dinner is it feels at this point, though, that the good people are starting to rally together even privately and talk about how do we move forward. And I'm talking about across party lines. I've been in touch much more with people that I've never agreed with on television before, but we're communicating and talking about, like, that was a great column you wrote. That was a great thing you said. I agree with you about this. And I think there is this sense of people who are sane and kind and decent, wanting to take back this country and genuinely make America great again. And so I'm hopeful that once the election is over, I don't think Donald Trump's going to go away. No one thinks that. But I do think there's going to be this great effort among kind people, decent people to try to reclaim our country together. I do sense that.
Well, Rich, what you said about the decline of standards, I think, you know, there are certain standards that have declined. But I think also there's an important aspect of the way Donald Trump has framed his campaign as being about political correctness. Mm-hmm. That, like, some things that people talk about as political correctness are, in fact, like stifling overreach things. We've had all these articles this week about whether Ken Bone is bad and Ken Bone's old Reddit posts make him not woke enough and all these things. And that stuff is stupid and annoying.
Right.
But a lot of people, when they say this country is too politically correct, what they mean is I want to be able to freely express my racist and sexist ideas and say whatever horrible things and call a woman a fat pig on national television if she upsets me. And that's part of what I think Donald Trump has done that's so damaging, is that as certain socially conservative ideas have been written out of the popular culture, Trump appealed to a lot of conservatives who have decided that politeness itself is a problem,
right,
because norms of politeness have been used to enforce ideas they didn't want.
Right. No, that's exactly right. As an opponent of political correctness, I always have to push back against the idea that political correctness is just a kind of a new and maybe more bureaucratic way of enforcing politeness. And it's not that. You see on college campuses, it's a real effort to suppress speech from and thought from the other side. But Donald Trump is exhibit A in the case that an opponent of political correctness just wants to be rude and offensive. And I thought a lot about this. We've had, you know, political leaders and presidents with deeply flawed characters before, Richard Nixon, for instance. But there was something about our culture, and specifically political culture, that sort of created guardrails where you had to hide it and you had to make a serious attempt to be a serious person. And those guardrails are down, which is why Donald Trump could win a major party nomination.
Well, but the other guardrail was shame, right? This is because, and this is also why I'd push back on the idea that Trump is just a symptom, not a cause. I mean, I think he is a symptom of a lot of things. This didn't come out of nowhere. But I think he has a unique personality that has allowed him to get into this position. And one of the unique aspects of it is that it is impossible to make Donald Trump feel ashamed.
That's true. Shamelessness. But also, he's also a celebrity.
Right.
And you get away with a lot in this country if you're a celebrity.
And I was just about to say that that's a part of the vulgarity. It's not the political arena. I think what you touched upon, Rich, is really the Kardashianification of American culture. Or even, I mean, look, I get in trouble when I've written about this, but I don't think Beyonce, for as over-sexualized as her image is, should be trotted out as a role model for small children, especially small girls. And that's something the Obamas once said, is that she's a great role model. I don't agree with that for small girls. But we're at this mark where there is no line between over-sexualization, how people talk about sex in American culture. There was a time you never would have heard the P word bandied about in conversation about political candidates. That would have been rendered unacceptable. We now live in a culture where that's become a part of typical jargon, or the idea that someone had a sex tape come out and used it to leverage their celebrity is not something that's considered odd or tasteless or shameful anymore, and would have been 10 years ago. So that's part of why we're in a completely new realm of how we talk about these things, and I don't think it's a good realm.
But it's not just about Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump has now enabled all of his supporters who maybe felt shame in some of their views to now be open on Twitter, open with their families, you know, their surrogates, open on television, saying things that all sorts of people would be ashamed to say. This is not just about presidential candidates and presidents. And I think that's the genie that's going to be difficult to put back in the bottle.
Yeah, that's what I really wonder what life after Trump is going to look like. I mean, the first question is, are we going to have life after Trump, or is he going to start his own television network? Is he going to try to run in 2020, either as a Republican or as an independent? My personal hope is that as various things ratchet up with assault allegations and the Trump University trial, that Trump will take up residence in a country that does not have an extradition treaty with the United States. But that might be too much to hope for. But I guess my question is, how much of this is sustainable once he is less in the forefront of our political conversation?
Just in sheer political terms, if he loses, the key thing will be the decision whether he wants to do this again. And I think the factor there will be how much he thinks this has hurt his business, if at all. And you would think, if your entire business is based on putting your name on things, the last month, not to mention the last 14 months, have been very bad for that. But I would expect him immediately to begin at least flirting with the idea of running as an independent in 2020, which keeps his name out there and keeps him on the cable TV shows, keeps us all talking about him. And even if that doesn't happen, kind of the pro-Trump right is going to be a real force. And the guy who is going to be most agonized and tortured by it right off the bat is going to be Paul Ryan, who I think really stepped in it this week. I think his strategy of trying to save the House, every man and woman for himself, makes sense. But he didn't have to say it. Especially don't say it if you're not really saying anything new. And it's made him a hate totem for the Trump right. And it's also sets him up as the fall guy. They're going to have all these RCP poll averaging graphs. And there's going to be a line when Ryan, you know, came out with that call. And they're all going to say, look, Trump went down from that moment, and they'll blame Ryan for it.
Well, what I was going to say, too, is I don't know if you all are familiar with Liz Mayer, but the GOP strategist who actually tweeted yesterday that she said, just for the record, the two major bombshells I was referring to in terms of Donald Trump have not dropped yet.
Liz
so
Mayer is
let's
the,
keep that in mind.
Liz Mayer is the Republican strategist who was one of the early people out on the anybody but Trump bandwagon.
Ran she a
was
pro-Cruz PAC.
They had a pack, I believe it was called Make America Awesome PAC, was their anti-Trump PAC. Margie, did you have thoughts to get in here?
We could not have, if we sat around and said, what would be the worst possible way this could unfold for Republicans, we might come up with something just like what exactly is happening. So I don't envy a lot of Republican rank and file members of Congress and senators who, you know, were trying to avoid exactly this. But you're now in a situation where there is no clear message from the party about what Republican voters should do, where Republican candidates stand. That's going to cause a lot of problems, not just for Paul Ryan, but for everybody, not just in November, but for a long time.
Rich, do you think Ryan is going to be speaker next year? I don't just mean if Republicans lose the majority. If they come back with a majority of 4 or 5 seats, is he going to be able to round up votes to be elected speaker again?
That'll be really treacherous if it's close. There's no doubt about it. He's in an extremely difficult situation because the base of the party is still with Trump. And the base of any political party, by definition, they're partisans above all. And they're not going to give up and they're always going to want to fight. And he needs those votes of those people to win these seats. He needs to keep the majority. On the other hand, you have a lot of members who just need to scatter in the other direction. So it's very difficult to do gracefully. The guy who has done it gracefully is Mitch McConnell. It's mostly consisted of just keeping his mouth shut.
Hiding. Yeah. Hiding.
I don't think anybody's ever described Mitch McConnell as graceful before.
Gracefully
wily.
Hiding.
The guy who's done it in a wily manner.
We've reached that time once again for our famed left, right, and center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Margie O'Meara, what's your rant?
So today I had to talk about the election to my daughter's preschool class. And honestly, I wanted to live in this fantasy political world that I had described where the president has their own bowling alley and their own helicopter. And then we all practice voting on things like cupcakes versus ice cream or whether we should provide pizza or playgrounds for all kids. I mean, it was really so lovely and saccharine, literally. But now you have in the real world, a lot of voters are feeling very stressed about this election, and I don't blame them. Normally, I might welcome a conversation about sexual assault so we can learn about where the boundaries are, learn about how prevalent this truly is and have real open conversations about it. But are we paying too high of a cost for this conversation? I don't know the answer yet. I don't. And I think we might be.
Rich Lowry.
As we've discussed through most of the program, this has not been an edifying time to be a social conservative. So hats off to Christianity Today and World Magazine, both evangelical journals that have denounced Donald Trump in terms that, well, you'd expect from evangelical journals.
Kelly Goff.
Well, obviously, this has been somewhat of a depressing campaign, and we're trying to figure out ways to move forward. So one of the things I really want to try to inspire people to do is we need more good people to run for office. And I think that Donald Trump and Bill Clinton both also make the case for why we need more good women to run for office, because study after study shows we tend to have fewer sex scandals. And so if there is a good woman out there listening who wants to make a difference in this world, one of the things we need is for more of you to actually run for office.
For my rant, one thing that has left me not knowing whether to laugh or cry this week has been watching Donald Trump's surrogates go on cable television to defend the indefensible. They produce some real howlers. My favorite is the defense that he couldn't have groped that woman on the plane like she said because she said they put the armrest up, and armrests don't go up in first class. This sent CNN's aviation editor scrambling to find photos of vintage first-class seats from the late 70s and early 80s, showing that indeed on several airlines you could put the armrest up in first class. We also had Kurt Schilling on Fox Business Network talking about that video of Donald Trump coming down the escalator looking at a 10-year-old girl and saying, I'll be dating her in 10 years. Kurt Schilling said to the anchor Trish Regan, who hasn't done that, Trish? Haven't you ever done that with a young boy? And Trish said, no, I have not. But maybe the most ridiculous defense of Donald Trump has been the people out there saying he's a changed man. That's an even dumber way of defending him than saying that the armrest stopped him from groping. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Rich Lowry, Margie O'Meara, and Kelly Goff. Laura Dine Million produced today's program. Our technical director is JC Swadek. Katie Burskins is our production assistant. I'm Josh Barrow. Thanks for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
So if you like pajamas,
nice pajamas.
I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
Well, we know we need each other, so we better call the police.
Download the podcast from KCRW.com or from iTunes and share your comments at KCRW.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed KCRW.